It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battle Born Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, 5 o'clock hour, Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Justin Watkins is in studio. Alex White, Alexandra, is here. We have pros versus Joes to get into in about 20 minutes. We do have to talk some betting, though, before we do anything.
Yes.
Because I know your Joe picks have really sucked.
Yeah.
I think you're on the wrong side of a couple of JVT bets. I cannot, for the life of me, remember the second one. But the first one was the Patriots win total.
Yep.
And he was really gung-ho on the Patriots.
Yes.
At 9.5 win total, which was higher than their actual win total. You're in trouble. They're 8-2. 9.5.
Yeah, I'm in trouble. But, I mean, when the stakes are dinner, like, we all win. You know, yeah. That's fine. And
he's gonna be disappointed in your reaction. Like, he thought you'd be all busted up. Like,
Well, I mean,
I don't want to put out the money.
After the run I've been on the pros versus Joes, that's like the least of my worries is losing a dinner. I mean, I get to eat the dinner too, so you know, it's a win for me.
Do you remember where we were going? Was it downtown?
I think he gets to pick, right?
Oh, that's right. He does get the pick.
Yeah.
I think you picked a place, but you got no shot now.
Yeah.
I mean, believe me, I would love to see the Patriots completely collapse and finish 8-9 or 9-8.
That ain't going to happen.
That ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
It's one of the more annoying stories out there.
Yeah, I think we had said, I told him I wanted to do Guy Savoie, which is like the most expensive restaurant in Vegas. And he's like, okay, that's where we're going to go then. So that's fine. If that's where you guys want to go. It's awesome.
I like that you said you guys. He claims that I was in on the bet. That's
how you
were.
You finagled in on the bet where like you got to get taken to dinner without having to put up the stakes. No,
well,
actually, you were on my side.
That's what I think too.
Yeah, so it's two against one. You got to pay half the bill.
I think he got that wrong. Oh, damn it! Now I have to go back and get the proof of this bet.
Yes, exactly.
To see what the hell I said. Let's hit some legal stories here. First of all, Mike McCann is very good up on the Twitter machine. Said NFL's grievance against NFLPA over the union's team report card raises a number of interesting health and labor law issues, including how CBAs are enforced.
This one's super interesting, and it'll be fun to follow from a legal perspective. Maybe, you know, not from the story perspective, but legally, what we're dealing with here is, so all the players get together, and they give their feedback to the union on what they think about the facilities and team doctors and management and ownership of each team. And what comes out of that is the Players Association have a grade and they give a report card to every team. And there's some rough grades out there. There's some Fs and F minuses and, you know, these, you know, comments like the ownership or players don't, or ownership or management don't care about the players or their families. They treat the families poorly. The facilities are a wreck, things like that. And so now the NFL has actually filed a grievance against the Players Association saying you can't do this. And they've pointed to the CBA in which the parties have basically, in different terms, agreed to not be public in their criticism about each other. And it is unique seeing the NFL bring a grievance against the players on something like this. But those clauses about, like, you know, not disparaging the NFL or the teams or their personnel is a part of the NFL Constitution, and that's not collectively bargained. It's incorporated into the CBA by reference, but it does not require collective bargaining to change, and it is not collectively bargained itself. So from a players association standpoint, you can kind of point to a couple different things. Number one, that's the Constitution language. That's got nothing to do with us. And number two, from a labor standpoint, you're trying to tell us that amongst ourselves, we can't say what we like or dislike about management. That communication is fundamental,
yes,
to our collective bargaining. Like, how do we collectively bargain if we're not allowed to talk amongst ourselves about what's going on? The NFL's response is, cool, you could do all that. You don't publish the report card to the public. You don't need to do that in order to have your rights protected. And that's why we got this grievance. So I think at the end of the day, and you know I don't side with the NFL.
Come on now. This goes to court. It's getting struck down. The players win.
Players will not win this.
Really?
No, I really don't think that they will, because they went public with it and they've agreed from a collective bargaining standpoint about any criticisms are to be handled in-house as a part of the grievance process, not in the court of public opinion.
Interesting how that going public thing works. Because it wasn't officially going public, but I bet you John Gruden and company are like, well, you seem to go public, leaking my emails.
And the NFL's going to lose on that one. And we've been consistent about that, right? So we'll be consistent. The one who goes public is going to lose.
You know, I love TikTok. And a couple of the folks who I think, again, this isn't my algorithm, right? I guess I'm unhappy. I'm not. But I see all the time labor attorneys, right? And they're kind of point out situations at work, like, hey, and they want business. But something I always see is they talk about general workplaces. Businesses will say, you can't talk about your salaries amongst yourselves at the office.
Okay.
And I see labor attorneys repeatedly say, no, that's not correct.
Well, every state's different.
Oh, okay.
In the state of Nevada, it is illegal for an employer to restrict your ability to communicate with others about what you get paid and about your promotion and evaluation. You are allowed to talk about that openly, freely, and if they were to restrict you in any way, reprimand you in any way, or terminate you, you would have a cause of action against them. You cannot do that in the state of Nevada. You can't say, hey, I'm going to give you this raise, but you can't talk about it. You've already broken the law. Can't do that.
I always use the line with people at remotes where they come up and they'll ask, like, you know, we have the drawings, and they'll be like, hey, can I get a t-shirt? And I'll be like, here you go. Don't tell anyone. Like I'm a doting father.
Yeah.
Don't tell the other kids here.
Yeah.
I gave you a t-shirt and a Raiders koozie.
That's fine.
It's not against the law to be nice, right?
Yeah, or to lie.
To lie.
You're protected.
Justin Watkins is here with Alex White, Steve Cofield. 766-1400 is a call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number for Battleborn Injury Lawyers. We've got a special session going on right now. Are we looking at another like $5 billion being spent without us having a word on it? Is this something to do with the film tax, film industry? What do we got going here?
So there are 7 bills that are being considered, many of which have already made their way to the governor's desk during the special session. I think at this point in our statehood, with the population that we have, it's almost going to be routine that there'll be at least one special session in between the odd year regular sessions. So we have some what the governor termed cleanup work that we needed to do after the session. He had his crime bill, which had the votes but died procedurally on the last day. There is some educational reform issues that also had the votes but died procedurally on the last day. And then the big ticket item is this film tax credit, which did it have the votes? Nobody really knows. Is it popular? It seems to be wildly unpopular. Here's why this is a challenge. So there already is in existence a film tax credit for companies who come here and film movies here. They are given a credit that exists in the state of up to $15 million and that on their taxes. But that tax credit is transferable, meaning I get the credit. Well, if my taxes don't eat up all of that credit, I can sell those tax credits to you. And the going rate is about 90 cents on the dollar. So big casinos, the people who buy these tax credits are typically insurance agency or insurance companies. They'll spend 90 cents and then give 100 cents of a tax credit. So that's less taxes they have to pay. This film tax credit bill to build a studio right down the road here in Summerlin, it seeks to expand that to $150 million a year for 20 years. So it's a $3 billion tax credit. And like most tax credits, the proponents say, hey, the studios won't move here unless we give this tax incentive, right? So we are going to create a tax base that otherwise wouldn't exist because now we are going to have a new industry in the state of Nevada. That's true. But what the opponents say here and why it's unpopular is all of that $3 billion is transferable. So that is dollar for dollar, $3 billion that the state of Nevada is not going to receive. That in essence, the taxpayers are footing the bill for, so that these industries can move here, not pay any taxes, not only not pay any taxes, but have other industries on top of that not pay taxes because they've sold them their credits.
So why can't we just say you can't sell the credits? They wouldn't move here? Or is that like a standard deal in California, in Georgia, other places?
No. It's not a standard deal.
Why can't we just be normal and it's for the film industry? Yeah. You can't sell it.
So I'm not in on the negotiations, right? I didn't write any of this bill, but that has been where the opponents have been now for two sessions, and now we're on a special session. That's where the opposition has held firm. Don't make them transferable. And that language has never changed, which tells me that studios won't move here unless it's transferable, right? Because on the outside looking in, it basically makes their studio almost free, mm-hmm. right? I get to not pay taxes on it. It cost me, let's say, $100 million to build this studio. So I build the studio for $100 million. My taxes, let's say, are $20 million. And there's $150 million of a tax incentive, $100 of which I could sell to the resorts or to the insurance industry for $90 million. So I just came out on top. You know, it didn't cost me anything. I don't know what's going to happen. But the fact that we've gone this far in a special session, now they've just done an extension of the special session for a new bill. Some history was made. The legislature called itself into special session, which has never happened in Nevada history, even though it's in the Constitution, to prevent corporate homeowners from buying so many homes at the same time. So that's going to be heard. I don't think the film tax credit is going to make it. I don't think it's going to pass.
Well, that homeowner thing is fascinating. What's going to happen there?
I haven't seen the language yet. So the legislature just called itself into special session last night. So the bill will drop probably today. It probably already has. The language is out there. I haven't had the opportunity to read it. But a prior version of the bill was no corporation can buy more than 100 homes in the state of Nevada in any one given year. So it's to prevent like a super massive impact on the housing industry by any one entity.
Lombardo likes the film tax, right? He's behind
it. He does.
Do we have any idea what he thinks of the homeowners?
I think he's in favor of that one.
Okay. Former assemblyman Justin Watkins, jack of all trades, master of all of them. I wasn't going to say the
master of none.
No.
Certainly not the betting.
We'll get to pros versus Joes here in a second. I don't, and I love slamming this guy. I don't want to pass judgment. Because we've all been in relationships. We're in relationships. Right, Alex? Sometimes you have to do stuff that you don't want to do because you're paying back favors, right? It goes back and forth. Why am I seeing Bill Belichick in season hanging out at a cheerleading competition in Raleigh, North Carolina? My other question is, what is adult? I mean, this is your expertise.
I know.
Are you still doing that? Are you in, like, cheerleader camp? Are you an adult cheerleader? Like,
no, but there definitely are.
Jordan Hudson is part of a cheerleading adult group, and she's in a competition, and Bill's in Raleigh.
Yeah.
She's not really far away from Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
What's happening here?
I mean, I'm glad you asked, Alex, because I know that's in her background, and I didn't want to completely crap on, like, adult cheerleading.
We're going to be respectful.
We don't have to now. I want to hear from Alex.
She's
like,
laughing.
Is this like, do people who were in the cheer world, like, you coached, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you see these adult cheerleaders and you're like, whoa,
when you say
super
adult,
weird?
It's like, you know, late 20s. Or that's like the oldest, right? From 20 to 20.
Some of those dudes looked more into the middle age.
I will say that I
a couple
think,
of Cofields
I think
out there.
Men typically will cheer longer, but it's like, it's all star and they still do competitions year round. And then there's a big world's competition that they will compete in.
Right.
So I'm sure this was like a qualifier for.
But is it seen as weird?
That I'm in the.
No,
that
no, no.
I've
that
been the, in the
that
world?
They're still in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's all I needed. Okay. So it's super weird that this thing's happening, that I'm looking at pictures of Belichick that looks like sitting on the sidelines, like I'm watching my 15-year-old and 13-year-old at volleyball, but he's watching his girlfriend at a, you know, middle-aged cheer competition.
Right.
It's super weird.
Well, like, if that's your hobby and you're staying in shape and you want to, you know, keep cheerleading for a while and competing, that's fine. But to make your pretty famous boyfriend that is the head coach of a university right now, former for an NFL team, go to that is a little ridiculous.
Right. So you know he's not getting the Giants job now, right? Like, if
you think even John Mara's like, okay, yeah. Someone explain this to me.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if there was a chance now, you're just like, how could we have this kind of press around a professional organization at this point? How can you? I mean, the colleges are having a hard time with it. The NFL, please. Like, yeah. The amount of distractions is just too much.
Justin Watkins, he's a tremendous attorney. Really does a good job. 766-1400. I'm trying to cover. I don't know if you did something bad there or not. Alex White, of course.
Did I?
No, not at all. I think that's what most people are thinking. Like, what the hell's going on? Okay. I have cheerleading material that I need to get to that I've been sitting on for a while. I've been wanting to do it during the UNLV broadcast, but I haven't done it because I don't want to be taken the wrong way. So instead, I will do it on the show that more people listen to over the UNLV broadcast. Nothing against UNLV when I'm doing basketball games. When did the Rebel Girls come around? How long has it been?
It's been a while.
So they're really 90s, good. They're like national championship level. Yeah. They're really good.
Right.
And so then they brought in Company, right? I was like, okay, you stole my name. That's fine. It was Rebel Girls and Company. And they had some dudes dancing, and they were like pretty good dancers. I don't know what happened this year. They have like, it's like all these giant dudes. Like, I feel like they can all dance. I feel like maybe something happened on the road. They got bullied, and they were like, okay. So they've now beefed up. All the guys are like good-sized dudes. I think the Rebel Girls and Company and the guys can beat the out of any other freaking dance troupe in the country. These guys are badasses.
Well, can they beat up the teams that they're cheering for?
I don't
could
think
they could. Could they take the basketball team?
I think some of the smaller basketball players, there's a couple of guys on the team who are pretty big.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not saying to go out there and, you know, first of all, don't fight the basketball team because they need them. They want to keep winning. Josh Pastner would be very heartbroken if more of his guys got hurt. No, I just, my whole point here, and I really don't want to go down this path, because there's this whole narrative that there was a phony story before the season, like the NFL was going to add all these male cheerleaders. I don't think people understand what male cheerleaders are a lot of times. Like what we've had in the past, generally they're kind of like stocky dudes who are throwing people around.
100%.
Like they're not weaklings.
No, most of them are former athletes. Actually, that then if they had an injury or something that kept them away from playing football, then they went to cheerleading and then learned how to stunt and everything, and mostly just do that part. The dance is a little strange that they're.
They can all dance, though. I watch them.
But, I mean,
I watch them, and I'm like, I just smile. I'm not laughing because I'm like, this kid is going to light me up.
Oh, they're really good, yeah. And now that they added all the guys in.
I don't know why I think these things. Yeah, you thought about the cheerleading. I think about the dance.
Deep in it. I'll say this. Cofield and Company confession. Here we go. My brother was a cheerleader in high school because he was a gymnast.
Oh, really?
And so he didn't dance. But he would tumble.
Yeah,
he would do all the flips.
I could never
stuff.
Tumble.
Yeah, he was a very good gymnast. So I'm gonna tell you, he did pretty good with the ladies by being on the cheerleading team, dude.
I think for the people who worry about it during the off season during wrestling. I think a lot of the people who worry about male cheerleaders are actually kind of projecting that they don't do that well with women.
Right.
Like, sorry, man.
Yeah,
they got it.
No,
you know,
yeah,
they're kind of big. They're muscular, and they're getting the chicks, and they can dance, and I can't dance, so I'm very jealous.
I don't know about the dancing. I haven't noticed that, but yeah. they're good. They're
Rebel Girls and Company. The company's impressive.
Well,
more impressive than our company.
Well, not Alex.
I was talking more about I won't say some names, so their feelings get hurt. But
I mean,
it's good. You got to go watch them.
Their workout is crazy.
Yeah.
They have to do like 5 a week and run a 2 mile in 16 minutes and all these different things.
And can I tell you, I watch the other schools. I watch the Mountain West. They're a bunch of stiffs in this conference. Between the cheerleaders, and there's not many male dancers, the cheerleaders are not like we. I'm going to say we as UNLV. We kill it.
Cream of the crop.
We have really good cheerleaders and dancers. Some of these other groups.
What about San Diego State?
SDSU is the other one.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was your competition, your rival?
Yep, definitely.
I'm not going to call out the others. There's certain cases where they don't really have
time.
Well,
come on. I mean, they're up in the mountains and stuff.
Let's get it together, Air Force. Spend a little more time dancing.
Wyoming? Come on, man.
Well, they're not practicing outside.
Yeah, but the fact that they feel the cheer team is accomplishment enough up there.
I don't know what noise we need to have for off the rails, but it went. Justin Watkins is here on the way back. Pros versus Joes, college football breakdown. Let's get some winners, please.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Justin Watkins here. Cofield, Alex White. We're in the Finley Toyota Studios. We're heading towards the Josh Pastner radio show. Before we get out of here, I promise, James, let's start waving at me. We got another pair of VGK tickets before, we'll say 5:35, okay, for the game against the Blackhawks. I could have filled that entire break with cheerleading talk.
You kind of did.
I kind of did, I know. I watch things.
Yeah.
I'm very observant. I'm not your normal radio guy. Like people, most radio people, they leave air and they just keep talking. I watch. I want to see things. I want to learn.
Okay.
Why I needed to learn about the Rebel Girls and company. Okay. Anyway, I have thoughts. When I listen to you pick college football, they're not real positive right now.
Well, you know what? Last week.
You have twisted yourself into a gambling pretzel.
Yeah. Yeah. I blame Alex, actually, because she's the pro. I told her what I was going to do last week, wherever I thought the game should go, I was going to pick the opposite. And she waited until I did that for every game. I made the justification for the pick that I thought was right. And then I said, okay, now I'm going opposite of that, right? Then we get off air and she's like, no, you should never do that. You should just play it right through. But I made all the picks. Yeah, I went 0 for 5.
Yeah, you're on record.
I went 0 for 5 last week.
You're the pro.
As soon as we got off, she's like, no, you got to just go through the process. You never go WAPO.
You have to be. You're the pro. You have to be strong with us.
Yes, you got to tell me what to
what
do.
We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously,
she is right.
You're just laughing and off. You're just like, dude, you're chasing it, bro.
I know what you're doing because I've done it before. Where there's no rhyme or reason. The other one, the classic mistake, of course, is changing your bet number too. You bet the same amount every game. You don't chase.
Oh right. At the end, I didn't do that.
Okay, let's get into some of these.
So you
get
did
into some
read the
games.
Board right, is what you're saying, and
yes.
Then you forced it and went with the opposite side. So,
you really were 5-0.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it.
It was actual money. Yeah. Okay, UCLA is taking on Washington.
Yeah. So this is in LA. Obviously UCLA fires off when Neuheisel. He's the new star of the show. Washington has been pretty steady all year long. But I feel like this is a great opportunity for UCLA. Washington's defense is susceptible, I think, to a good offense. The number's really big. I got a 10.5 at home with UCLA. And so I like that number. And I like that side. I like that number. And I'm picking that one this week.
If I were to play it, it would be the dog. I wouldn't lay that number here with Washington on the road. They won by 12 last year. Mm-hmm. I think this is a better UCLA team, but I made it pretty close. I'm right there at 9. So it didn't jump out to me, but I would lean your way.
Georgia Tech and Pittsburgh.
I'm a sucker for Georgia Tech, dude. I love their coach. I love the way that they play. You know, the fact that Pittsburgh gets smoked last week and Georgia Tech's only a 2.5-point favorite here. I feel like Georgia Tech is a lot closer to Notre Dame than they are to Pitt. And so as far as a skill of a team. So this one did jump out at me. I really like this. I got it under 3, so I got it 2.5. Give me Georgia Tech.
I'm with you. I made it higher. I made it 5.5 with Georgia Tech at home. I was on Pittsburgh last week against Notre Dame. They were at home. I didn't bring them down too far. I really adjusted Notre Dame up because I was impressed with them. But, yeah, I think Georgia Tech in this spot at home. And they had a scare last week, too. So they'll be prepared. They'll be ready for this one.
New Mexico and Air Force. We just had a lean from John Von Tobel on Air Force. What do you want to do?
He likes Air Force. So, you know, from my perspective on this one, Air Force in Colorado Springs is always a little bit dicey, always playing the little gimmick scheme, and you're at elevation, but New Mexico's at elevation. New Mexico's close there. They're going to have some fans there. I like the coaching that they have. I think that they X's and O's wise from a coach perspective, I think outside of Mullen, I think they got the best in the Mountain West. So, you know what? I like the number. Let's go to New Mexico on this one.
See, this one is tough because New Mexico also kind of had a scare against Colorado State, so I'd imagine they'd have a good bounce back, but I do like Air Force at home. and JVT even said it, not a lot of time to prepare for the option here. I didn't make it 3.5, so I think there's value getting the points there.
Damn. Alex came over the top there. 2 against 1. 2 pros. JVT's kind of a pro against Justin Watkins. Okay, 2 more games. Baylor, Arizona.
So this is a very Joe pick in that Arizona is hot and cold all year long. They played a great game last week, so I'm off them this week. Let's go with Baylor.
I'm not touching this game because I lost with both these teams last week. I had Cincinnati against Arizona. They lost outright. And I had Baylor trying to cover against Utah, and they got beat up on pretty good. So I'm staying away, but it would be a lean that way. I didn't make it that high at 6.5.
I like this next one because, as I've said the last couple weeks, my attitude is the teams that have to win, man, it starts getting tight. It's a lot of pressure. There's no room for error. VTech, nothing to play for. Although they might feel good about Jimmy Franklin coming on board. They just found out who their new head coach is going to be. Miami expected to just whip them.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't have a ton of confidence in Miami to whip anybody these days. And I do think that, like, Virginia Tech finding their coach, I have to think that they feel like they got one of the better coaches available out there. Got to be feeling pretty good if you're a player at VTech that, hey, you know what? I might still be a player here next year. And we got new coaching, we got new direction, we got something to play for, going to have some tape for Franklin or some tape for transfer portal, whatever it's going to be. So I think that they have plenty of reason to play. And, you know, like I said, I just don't like the Hurricanes in a position where they got to pile on a whole bunch of points. And 17.5 is a whole lot of points.
I agree. Oddly enough, I haven't really been for or against Miami this year at all. I was on them against that Notre Dame team and then kind of just backed off. It is a lot of points on the road. And last year, Virginia Tech played them close, 38-34. So it's a lot of points. Probably won't touch that game, though.
Alex White, South Point Studios, Circa Invitational. What's the latest? They're lopping off the bottom of the field.
Yes, they are. I think I'm 7th right now.
All right.
So I need to start making a run here.
You got to get hot.
Yeah.
Or else.
5-2 last week.
Ooh. Okay. That's a good start.
There we go. All
right.
Oh, that makes me feel great about my picks. She was with me on all of them except for New Mexico. Okay.
All right.
We're going to get back on track.
Big games. You're an Oregon expert, sort of. You watch them as an Oregon State guy. What do you think? Against USC.
Yeah. I mean, normally I feel like Oregon has always got USC's number. This USC team's better than in previous years. Like I always feel like they're overhyped, and I feel like this year is the one year where they seem to be disregarded a little bit by the public, where they're a little bit better than the public perception really is. So gun to my head on this one, I think number 6.5, is that right?
No, upwards of 10.
Oh, then give me USC.
Yeah, you really like the number there.
I've been on this USC team a lot, and luckily I got a good number 10 against Notre Dame, and my number is pretty close to this, but I'm not a big believer in Oregon. I think they are analytically look really strong because of when they piled it on to, you know, Oklahoma State and smaller teams. I like this USC team. I think it's too many points. So I'm actually going to go against my number and take the points here for the Trojans.
Last 30 seconds.
Great. That'd be great for the Ducks to lose.
I was rooting for BYU to be the good story. Now I'm done. I'm out. So I'm hoping Cincinnati wins this one. 2.5.
I stayed off this one. You knew I was with BYU all year long. I rode them all year long until they burned me. And then I went against them last week, and that burned me. I should have stuck with them. I think BYU is going to win this game. I think Cincinnati got exposed a little bit last week as to whether or not they're really that top 25 caliber team. I think BYU is a top 25 caliber team. I think they're a top 15 caliber team. They've got everything to play for. They could still be in the CFP. I don't think Cincinnati has any of those options available to them. I think BYU is going to win this game and pretty handily. Give me, I think it's at 2.5, right?
Yeah.
I think they'll win close to a touchdown.
Wow.
Definitely leaning the other way. Sorsby had a really bad game last week against Arizona. I think that they could have a bounce back spot here. I'm not saying they went out right. Maybe BYU wins by 1 or 2 points, but I think it could be close. I made it closer to pick. And I've been on BYU a lot too, so I think my numbers are pretty good with these two.
Let's do a giveaway here. 364-1100, 364-1100. Golden Knights taking on the Blackhawks on the 2nd of December. That's a 7 o'clock start. AXS.com is where you can get the tickets. Again, it's at the Fortress, T-Mobile. 7 o'clock start, AXS.com. We'll give away two tickets right now, 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller 7. We're going to talk to Clinton Yates, who is doing mornings for us now out of L.A. He's a national host with ESPN Radio, so he's going to join us in just a couple minutes. I'm glad you came in. You had a film crew with you. You're going to have a documentary done, something real sick.
Nobody wants to see a documentary.
We're just getting some new stuff
for the website. Redo the website, update it, refresh it. Been a fun little experience. Got to trim the beard, you know, get cleaned up a little bit.
I advise everyone, go to Battleborn Injury Lawyers on Instagram. Hot take, hot shot, Matt Hoffman. We're putting out some of his videos up on our social. Pretty, really good stuff, and a little bit different than some of the stories you cover. Really interesting stuff. Thank you. Appreciate it. Alex is going to stick around as Cofield & Company continues here. We'll give away those tickets. James will take care of you. 364-1100 on the way. Clinton Yates.
Now back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back here on Cofield & Company, let's get into a myriad of topics with our new morning guy, Clinton Yates out of L.A. on ESPN National. Clinton, appreciate you joining us. I want to get into what you saw with the Lakers last night and the return of LeBron.
So I did a lot of joking this morning on the show because there's LeBron James, who we know of as LeBron Raymond James of St. Vincent St. Mary's, Akron, kid from Akron fame, etc. But then in Los Angeles, there's the guy that came to the Lakers that was already a big deal when he got here. And that identity shift between diehard, super cultish Lakers fans and their relationship with LeBron James is hilarious. Because all of a sudden, everybody loves LeBron. LeBron came back and the team looked okay. LeBron is the most incredible player of all time when, I don't know, not as long as 8 months ago, you had people talking about, we got to trade him while we get a chance. We got to get rid of him, this, that, and the third. Anytime that LeBron makes Lakers look good, a lot of Lakers fans like LeBron. Anytime that LeBron appears to be bigger than the program, they turn on him. Last night was a night that a lot of people were in support of LeBron James because he looked good within the flow of the offense. They won the game, and he did not appear to be somebody that was hogging the ball, for lack of a better term. I know that's not hardcore basketball analysis, but that's a thing for a ball-dominant player who's got a usage rate the way that LeBron James does. So good night overall, and a pretty cool moment to be in the building for a guy who's played 23 seasons in the NBA, which obviously has never happened before.
That's pretty incredible. But that said, it does sound blasphemous when we hear, hey, maybe the Lakers are worse with him. Could that be the case?
I think it's possible. Now, one game does not make an entirety of a season, nor does it make even a homestand. I mean, they played the Jazz. The Jazz are horrible, and that team has looked good. I think the question becomes sort of the length of time, that they're able to sustain whatever it is. Because the point here is not to knock LeBron. The point is to praise J.J. Redick, who's done an incredible job putting together a system with a team of guys that not necessarily everybody would name off the street as everyday household names in the NBA. Austin Reeves has been an incredible scorer for this squad. Luka Doncic is obviously the leader of the team. And they've had different guys, Hachimura and others, who have contributed to the squad in ways that you think, well, there's got to be something bringing them together. Oh, right. That's what the head coach is for. It hasn't been LeBron who's been nursing back from the injury. So, yeah, I think JJ's done a great job with this team. And I do think there were legitimate, and so are, legitimate basketball questions as to how this plays out long term, more than just one game at home when everybody's already in a good mood.
Clinton Yates on ESPN Las Vegas. He's doing our mornings from 7 to 9. Am I crazy to suggest that one of the coaching moves that J.J. Redick could execute is getting LeBron to be less ball dominant? By doing that, you actually have him in the lane more, around the free throw line. Like, he's not facing the basket all the time, but he's more of a high post player.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing when you get into the chalk talk of what it is, because you wonder who else then plays in the low post position. And when you've got Jackson in that scenario, it kind of takes him out of his game a little bit. And that's where you start to have questions as to what exactly can LeBron do beyond just freestyle that's actually going to work for all the development they've done on the games of other people. DeAndre Ayton has turned into a little bit of a guy. He can be a low block player as well. I don't hate that idea. I just don't know if that then limits somebody else for something that we don't know, that we haven't seen yet. And for somebody from a LeBron standpoint, who you don't know how many minutes you're going to get a night out of him. 30 last night seemed like it was a little on the high end, if I'm being quite honest. But if you can get 20 to 25 minutes in a position like that, I think so. Whether or not that's the entirety of how he plays his game is a different question. But JJ Redick is not the only guy there. He's got a lot of good assistants with him. He's got Scotty. He's got Nate. You know, I mean, they're going to figure something out that's going to work for them. I think it's just a matter of whether or not LeBron's going to be able to play up to what his standard for himself is as a result of physical limitations.
Is Austin Reeves legit?
Austin Reeves is more than legit. I think Austin Reeves is the kind of player that you're honestly kind of lucky you still have after you got rid of a guy like a Caruso or a KCP after winning a title and deciding you were smarter than everybody. Austin Reeves is the only indication that they had some clue of what they were doing with that regard in terms of roster construction. I think if he was on another team, he probably wouldn't be as well known, but I think he would be as equally well liked. Him being on the Lakers is a perfect blend of not too big for his britches in terms of just kind of where he is in the NBA versus other guys, but also really feeling like he can flex when his game is on point. And he's fun to watch too, man. It's a real treat to be in the building where that guy's got it going.
Clinton and Friends is on ESPN Las Vegas, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, Monday through Friday. I saw you guys talking about, the coaching carousel in college football. I love this talk. I think it's going to get wacky. I love that. Basically, we've got a scenario now where the NFL can't actually outpay college football. That's how crazy it is. James Franklin is the first coach to drop with VTech. I think it's an awesome hire, but we do have a scenario here where people are going to look around and they're like, hey, our top five choices all said no or went somewhere else for a lot of these big time jobs. Then what happens?
Well, I think what they call that is a burst bubble, and it'll be interesting to see which teams actually suffer from that, because I think it'll be higher end teams as opposed to these kind of mid-tier squads. You know, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss is a fascinating discussion because the Floridas of the world seem to believe that they're the hottest chick at the bar at all times, as does LSU, when in reality, it's like, you know what? That might be a bigger headache than I choose. You know what I'm saying? In terms of Gainesville, in terms of the fact that they're turning over coaches all the time, you move over to LSU and you see a program that if you don't win in 4 years, you're out of there. And I don't know that anybody wants to deal with that. Not dissimilar to the sort of Penn State situation where you think to yourself, is this really a better job than whatever I'm doing right now? And the money will change a lot of that, but also the maneuverability of players now changes that as well. You don't necessarily have the inherent advantage in all these other schools of just saying, well, we're here, it's better than there. What are you going to do about it? I don't know that that's the case for a lot of people now, which is why bringing that all back together, the James Franklin scenario to me is fascinating, because Virginia Tech is the kind of program that, while once not quite a blue blood, is very much a prestige program, if you will, that if they find their way back to prominence, yeah, they do actually have a natural advantage because of where they are in the country, and that school is literally kicking in hundreds of millions of dollars in order to make the football program better. I think James Franklin probably landed the best out of anybody, even though VTech is kind of moribund right now, and I think he's the best coach for that job right now as well.
It is a mess here. Yeah. And what we've got is this misaligned front office coaching thing where I don't think Pete wanted Chip. I don't necessarily know that Pete trusts John Spytek. So we got a team that's looking to the future, but the 74-year-old coach won't play the young guys.
Yeah, it's a weird setup too, because he also decided to trade for an old guy, bringing the band back together at the quarterback position. That just hasn't worked out. As much as I love Geno, Eugene Cyril Smith III, we call him by his full government name on our show just to be funny, I don't think that that's working out. And for Pete Carroll also, it seems pretty clear that, like, again, maybe this was a bad idea. And I think Chip Kelly is perfectly capable of coaching that football team. If I was a Raiders fan, I would probably want him to be at the helm so you can get rid of all this old nonsense. Play the young guys, figure it out. Side note, I'll be there on Sunday to see Shador play at Allegiant. I'm looking forward to that.
Incredible. Were you planning on coming here a while ago, or did Shador just draw you?
I was assigned as a result of Shador getting the knock. Oh, my God. So
we've got two teams that are at the bottom of the NFL, and it is literally one of the top three games on the NFL slate. Yeah. All right, so give me your let's start out. Just give me your general take on Shador not playing to this point, and then when he did play last week, he looked fish out of water.
He looked like a fish out of water, but at the same time, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how first-string reps and second-string reps go and this, that, and the third, but the reason why it's a little different with the Browns is because both players they have at the quarterback position are rookies. Normally, if you got a backup who doesn't need first team reps to know how to play at live speed at the NFL level, then that's fine. But if you knew that Dylan Gabriel wasn't going to be necessarily that great, and you knew you had another rookie, perhaps it would have behooved you in training camp to make sure that they got some reps with the ones, or at least at some point along the way. You can't use the excuse both ways, which is to say, oh, he didn't get any reps. Oh, but we had a rookie. Your job is to make sure that your quarterback is prepared as a head coach of a football team. And Stefanski's kind of skating on this two-time coach of the year thing, when ultimately this is a long-term failure if Shador Sanders can't compete, not a short-term one. And that's where I think a lot of people sort of misunderstand what the entire purpose of criticizing Stefanski is. It's not about whether or not one guy was better than the other. It's about how did you plan for the possibility that one wouldn't work out and the other would have to play. It doesn't seem that they've had a very good plan at that, but we'll see, depending on how Shador makes a jump this week after practice.
I saw that you had Mel Kiper on Clinton and Friends yesterday. Did you throw gas all over the fire and get him like all rekindled and all worked up? Because Mel's gotten worked up over the years. I've never seen him flip out, and for like weeks afterwards.
Yeah. He was pretty hot on that, but no, we left him. We kept our powder dry, as we like to say, because we got to make sure that Mel comes back so we don't mess him up. But no, he was, I mean, I think for him, you know, he's always looked at Shador as what was going to be a project. I don't want to speak for him, but a project that was worth taking on. And I think that's ultimately most people's frustration, which is why I think you're going to see a lot of people at Allegiant on Sunday, not just Browns fans, not just randos who want to see, you know, this kid with the Rolex play football, but people who are genuinely like, are they going to screw this up? You know what I mean? Like, how, I say this all the time, quarterback is the worst coach position in the league. How is this going to go for a team that generationally is bad at the quarterback position? I think it's a pretty fascinating story, even though, yeah, right, it's two bottom of the barrel teams in the NFL.
At Clinton Yates up on Twitter, I saw a tweet about a thrift store.
Oh, yeah.
Now, was that actually you? Did you get a stock
photo?
That was
me. I am 44 years old. I have had, I am of the Iowa, and by Iowa, I mean AIWA, stereo generation. And man, I saw that bad boy. I was like, I should buy that. I should buy that right now. I don't have any CDs. I don't have any tapes, but I like the visualization on the front of that stereo because it reminds me of being 17 again. You know what I'm saying? And blasting that bad boy in my room, playing FIFA with my boys. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I went to the thrift store with my family. It's something we like to do. But, yeah, that was a big throwback for me, for sure.
Yeah, this is right here is a $2 Las Vegas hat from the swap meet. So I'm a swap meet. I'm a thrift store. Nice. We have an unbelievable swap meet here. It's great. Okay, let's close on this. On NFL in L.A., and Clinton Yates is up with us, our morning host, 7 to 9 on ESPN Las Vegas. Are the Chargers going to bounce back? I feel like 2 weeks ago, after they beat the Steelers, like, hey, this is a legit team. They got a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And then last week, the Jags are like, no, your offensive line sucks. Now we're going to shine a light on it.
They've had two major injuries to their offensive line this season that have been a disaster. And the funny part here is that when I first moved out here 5 years ago, I was like, I would be a Bolts fan and like taunt people with it. Like, yeah, huge Chargers guy over here. And they're like always just good enough for me to like have a little bit of fun with that. But then every single time I started getting chesty, it's like, oh, why do I keep saying this stupid joke? I feel like an idiot. So is Herbert going to waste a career out there? I don't think so. I think this is just sort of a lost campaign. I think that Harbaugh provides a lot of energy to that team. But what are you going to do when you lose two offensive linemen in preseason and halfway through the year? It's going to be tough. I like that team. They got cool uniforms. They're fun to watch. But Chargers got a Charger. That's pretty much what it is.
Are the Rams the best team in the NFC or the number three team in the NFC West?
The Rams are not just the best team in the NFC. The Rams are the best team in the National Football League.
Ooh.
As far as my money is concerned, I think the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl as well. Matt Stafford looks as good as any quarterback has looked. A lot of people are in the discussion around here of, is this the best actual team that Matt Stafford has ever played with? I think the answer is yes, and he's won a Super Bowl before.
Clinton, we appreciate the time this morning and continued success, and we'll be listening in the mornings here on ESPN Las Vegas.
No problem. Thank you. Appreciate you.
There he is, Clinton Yates from ESPN National. He is our morning show 7 to 9 right here on ESPN Las Vegas. His spot today is brought to you by Boomer Sportsbook. Sign up for a Boomer's account at Ellis Island or Casino Valley Verde and get up to $250 in bonus bets. Extra bonuses once you have the account for same game parlays. Player driven, local. It's Boomer Sportsbook. For more information, go to Bet with Boomer up on socials. Sign up now. That'll do it for Cofield and Company. We're headed to the Josh Pastner radio show. Get on out there if you can. 6 o'clock start, as Coach Pastner will recap the big win at Memphis and start to look ahead to a game against St. Joe's, and then next week in the Players Era NIL tournament with unbelievable opponents. Thanks to James for running the show. Thanks to all our guests today on Cofield and Company. We'll see you.